Welcome into Tomorrow with Dave Graveline, the interactive radio network program with the latest in high-tech products and services and the experts who bring them to you. This is Into Tomorrow. Here's Dave Graveline.
According to this here calendar, it is in fact the weekend of October 26th, 2018, and we thank you so much for tuning into Tomorrow. And just like he said, I am Dave Graveline. Here in the studio with me,
Chris Graveline.
Beth Gatrell.
Alrighty. And working with the show this week out of Italy, that's right, Erasmo. Out of New York, that's right, Horatio. Out of Atlanta, that's right, I think. Yeah, Joe.
We're just all over the place.
We are all over the place. Good heavens.
We go where the tech is.
Or the tech follows us. Or yeah. It's a stalker, actually, I think.
Although this week, tech problems follow us.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, you know, we can so relate to our audience on so many levels, especially the level of my computer's acting up again. Thank you, Microsoft. Not. Windows apparently did an update for me, and it doesn't appear to be that 1809 update that freaks people out and causes all kinds of problems. But guess what? The other morning, fired up my computer. No, actually had rebooted itself overnight. I got nothing. I can't access any documents. I can't access even Microsoft programs. Word, Outlook, nothing opens. Internet Explorer, nothing. Not that I ever used that one. That's the last on my list of browsers. But how about Windows Explorer? That's a simple thing. Won't open.
Well, you did get one thing. You got some more hard drive space when Windows deleted your documents folder.
Nice. Very nice.
Thank God for backups.
Yeah, I know. I can hear some in my audience right now saying, get a Mac! No. In fact, I've replaced my computer with a Commodore 64.
It's more reliable.
Yeah. Keyboard's a little stiff, but at least I'm computing. So that's the tech rage for me, and you didn't even have to bleep me very much.
I sure had to bleep you before we started recording the show.
Oh, boy, that's for sure. But then as soon as I come in the studio, no more of those naughty words. There's microphones here. Mm-hmm. Can't do that. But, boy, when I go back to my desk later, you'll hear more naughty words like darn and things like that.
Shucks.
Shucks is a good one.
I think I even heard a couple of dag nabbits.
You did hear a dag nabbit at one point. A golly gee, I think, got in there too. At least you can assume that those were the arable ones.
Yeah.
What have you got tech news-wise?
So the parent company of MoviePass announced plans this week to spin off the discount movie ticket subscription service into a separate public company. Another chapter in what has been a staggering rise and fall.
Mostly fall.
Yeah. The new subsidiary will be called MoviePass Entertainment Holdings, Inc., and it will be a film production and marketing exhibition company.
Yeah, right.
MoviePass Entertainment is expected to list on the NASDAQ or an alternate trading market.
Not because they won't have enough value to even be on NASDAQ.
Now, in 2012, Business Insider called MoviePass one of the top 25 most disruptive apps.
Well, that shows you how much Business Insider knows. Yeah.
Well, and as recently as a year ago, shares of MoviePass's corporate parent, Helios and Matheson Analytics, traded at nearly $4,000 a piece. Now, as of the time we're recording this show, I checked Yahoo Finance right before we came into the studio. They're currently trading at about 2 cents per share.
So from 4,000?
4,000 a year ago. Last November, they were trading at almost $4,000 a share.
A year later, two cents
a share.
A share. Wow. What does that tell you? You think there's some value not in that company at all? And this new spinoff will fail before it finishes spinning.
Yeah.
I mean, what a joke. You know, at one point, I even signed up and was using it, and then they just started screwing their best customers and saying, oh, no, you can't go see as much as a movie a day. I never did that anyway. At the most, I think I saw two in a week. But then they cut it down to three in a month for the same $10. And it was like, no. And then they messed that up, too. Those of us that were on MoviePass at one point or another, I don't know anybody that's still doing it. If you are, save your $10, because I can't imagine it's helpful to you. Because then it wasn't just, well, fine, three movies a month, $10. That's still cheaper than one movie in most places. Yeah, but then they were surge pricing. They were adding up to $5 more if a lot of people wanted to see the same movie, which basically meant every Friday and Saturday night, when most people want to go out to a movie, it was more costly. And then they started eliminating movies from many theaters because they didn't have the money to pay the theaters. Well, we've talked a lot over the years here on Into Tomorrow about exploding hoverboards and then exploding smartphones. Well, now you can add exploding body cameras to the list of tech products that have experienced some catastrophic battery malfunctions. The NYPD said it was pulling thousands of the ViView LE5 body-worn cameras that its officers use after one of them exploded.
Yikes.
Yeah. Fortunately, no one was injured because the officer wearing it noticed that there was smoke coming out of the bottom of the device and immediately removed it from his uniform. After he took it off, the body cam then exploded. The NYPD uses over 15,000 body cams, with about 3,000 of them being this ViView model. The vast majority of the others is a model that was made by Taser. Well, guess what? Taser bought ViView a few months back. So now it's a monopoly again, and they're exploding. At least that one is. So that's interesting. Well, I haven't heard yet. And as a former police officer, I'm always looking into these kinds of things anyway. Haven't heard yet of others exploding. I'm sure it's happening. But if you know of them, let us know, too, and we'll slam them some more on the air.
Yeah. And speaking of exploding, a little tech tip that I learned the hard way this week. If any of you are using one of those video projectors for your home theater system, and you have it turned on, and you notice a little dust in it, don't use canned air to blow into it as it's on.
Yeah. Oh, this you missed this, Beth. That was interesting. Just yesterday... And he's setting this up, and we're noticing, because we're setting it up with the Atmos digital decorations and doing here out of the studio front window at night, really cool digital decorations, as they call them, which are zombies trying to get out, and they're like at the windows and bloody shirts and stuff, and ghosts flying around and pumpkins and magical singing skeletons, all kinds of fun stuff for Halloween, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the only problem is the Atmos projector, the standard def one that we have, isn't very bright. And the front windows of the studio are tinted. And so it wasn't getting out very well. Well, we put this other projector in its place and fed everything. But then Chris is focusing it on the window and noticed a bunch of dust
on the inside, like in the backside.
On the inside,
right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had this bright idea.
Well first he blew into it,
right,
and it moved the dust, but it stayed in front of the bulb.
Right. You know, and then we had this bright idea. Well, we got a can of compressed air in the control room that we used to clean out the mixing boards and stuff.
Yeah.
So we
figured, what could it hurt?
Right, let's try that. He blew into it, and no, fireball!
Ooh. Yeah.
Wow.
And there was a fireball shot out of the projector. And then he quickly turned it off, and he goes, well, we've just blown that bulb.
Nice.
But the bulb didn't blow. Apparently.
Well, and it sure
you
smelled.
Caught some dust on fire?
Well, apparently that's what we did. Apparently we burned all the dust out of it.
Nice.
And guess what? There's no more dust. And it projects beautifully with a very bright, scary projection because it's Halloween stuff.
Don't try that
at all.
Yeah. Great, grave lines think alike. Great minds, whichever the line is. The point being is that it was really spooky. It was a very large fireball. And then that uncommon, hopefully for you, burnt smell of electronics. And we thought, uh-oh. You know, we've ruined this $1,000, $1,200 projector, let alone the bulb itself. All of a sudden, we thought, hey, what would it hurt? You know, he's unplugging it real quick and everything. Let's plug it in and see if anything happens. It came on.
Wow.
The bulb lit up. Everything was fine. No dust.
That's pretty crazy.
So we don't recommend fireball elimination of dust.
Yeah.
But it
yeah.
worked. It worked very strangely. But a good tech tip. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the fireball was wild. It was huge.
I can assume.
It was like the size of the projector. Boom! And I thought, well, that was interesting. Wonder what else we burned up. Because, boy, did it smell, that electronic burn smell. Not a fun thing. Yeah.
Facebook Messenger is going back to a simpler format in hopes of making users happier. The Messenger Vice President, Stan Chudnovsky, mentioned that the layout put the focus back on messaging and connecting. According to a study done by Messenger, 71% of participants said simplicity was a top priority.
That's funny. They do their own study in Messenger about Messenger to hopefully get some positive response. But instead, what was the biggest complaint?
That it wasn't simple enough to use.
There you go.
But the redesigned messaging app condensed the previous layout of 9 tabs down to only 3 tabs. You have chats, people, and Discover.
Oh, gosh.
But in September, Facebook revealed in a blog post that the company had reached 300 million active users for Facebook Stories and Messenger Stories. Their app dominates smaller platforms like Snapchat, which reported only 188 million active users.
Only 188 million. It's like only 1.6 billion. And no, we're not in South Carolina, so it wasn't us. The show must go on. It would have gone on anyway, honest to God, if we won.
It would have, but
it's just that we would have hired a bigger staff.
Stand-ins?
Yeah. Well, for some of the other
work. I would have been on vacation.
But on the air, it would still be us, because this is fun. This is our product. This is what we do for our listeners.
It is. We may have been doing it in Tahiti, though.
Okay, well, that's true. Coming to you from Tahiti. That would be different. But you were talking about Facebook, and among other things, Facebook added some additional new features to profiles and stories, if you care to use them. Last week, they rolled out more music features, giving you some more ways to integrate their various licensing partnerships with all three major labels into stories, if you do that sort of thing. You could also now incorporate them into profiles and the FB-owned Lip Sync Live feature. So now you can put music, among other things, in those features. Good luck with that, as if there's not enough goofiness on Facebook as it is.
Great. Now my kid will be stealing my Facebook.
Probably.
The British company Dyson, best known for vacuum cleaners and those air hand dryers. Truck stops. They're moving ahead with their plans to build an electric car.
Oh, great.
That's going to suck.
I see there. But in order for it to work, you have to put your hand simultaneously into two little areas.
Right. The company announced that board members have approved the construction of its first car manufacturing plant in Singapore, with the purpose-built facility due for completion in 2020. Dyson first announced that it would be entering the automotive business in 2017, with the company's founder, James Dyson, saying that his new cars would be radically different to current electric vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Reports earlier this year suggest the company has ambitions for a range of electric vehicles, with a first high-end model followed by two less expensive vehicles designed for the mass market. The company has earmarked $2.6 billion for this plan.
Wow.
Apparently they've sold quite a few vacuum cleaners.
And fans.
Yeah.
They're doing well in that business.
Yeah.
James in Nashville, Tennessee, listens to Into Tomorrow online. Welcome. Hey, James.
Hi, Dave. I haven't bought a laptop in about 6 years, and now I'm going to need to buy a new one, primarily for work, but also some pleasure. I understand CPU and graphics, but what are some of the other technologies I should be ensuring are in my next laptop? And any suggestions on these?
Well, James, we appreciate you bringing that up. It's the kind of thing we love to talk about periodically, and it's great to give out some hints and tips. The components, of course, are largely the same as they always were. If you're interested in gaming or video editing, for example, a good CPU and a decent graphics card will most certainly help. For general performance, RAM, random access memory, still matters by all means. And the same as before, you do have storage options, but those may have changed a little bit. Since about 6 years ago, SSDs, or solid-state drives, have both gone way down in price and gone way up in popularity. An SSD is definitely an upgrade you should consider. It will make your computer noticeably faster in a similar way to what you'd notice on an older system after upgrading the RAM. So not only will it boot up faster, but you'll retrieve your data much faster.
Now, and this depends on your personal usage, but a lot of people can also get away with smaller drives than they've had before. These days, people do a lot more online and less on the computer itself. So oftentimes, smaller drives are not a problem for the average user. Other than that, not really a whole lot has changed. Bluetooth is nice to have if you have an interest in wireless accessories like mice, keyboards, or different types of audio products, but that will likely be bundled in with your Wi-Fi in the same chip. Ports are not really a concern since almost everything will run off typical USB. Now, USB-C may change that since it legitimately is a more versatile type of port, but that will take some time since everything everyone owns now is the older USB Type-A.
And you may also want to check compatibility on your end with anything you might want to keep. For example, if you're looking to replace a desktop but want to reuse your monitor, you may want to check that the computer has the right output for it. Most modern ones use HDMI, and you may be using something different. This may sound like strange advice, but you may not need anything near the latest and greatest, and quality may be more important to future-proofing than power.
And most people don't need a computer at home at all these days, thanks to smartphones. And since so much has moved to the cloud, most powerful computers are largely wasted. Depending on what you do for work, you may also be able to skip the hefty price tags and go for a much cheaper option without ever noticing any difference.
Yeah, like a Chromebook. Look into that. And Microsoft is on my stuff list. That's clean for air, yeah. So I don't like recommending them these days at all, but you might look at their various Surface Pros and things like that, because they will work very well for you. Again, if you're not doing heavy gaming or video editing, you don't have to worry about massive CPU power and things like that. So let us know what you end up with, though. You ask some great questions. And, of course, if you're driving during our answer or anyone else unavailable to make notes and so forth, not a problem. Visit intotomorrow.com. Look for the show for the weekend of October 26th, 2018. Hour one. There you go. James Call. And our show notes will be there for you.
Hi there, welcome back to Into Tomorrow with Dave Graveline. I'm Cameron Graveline and Chris Graveline in the studio.
And Beth.
And a Russ Mullen ratio in the control room.
Kind of.
Now here's Dave.
And Joe in Atlanta. Well, thank you, Cam. We appreciate that because he's always reminding us of important things.
Call in, win stuff. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Like that. Calling in winning stuff is important. 800-899-4686. That's 800-899-INTO. Anytime, 24/7, when you have a consumer tech question that we can assist you with.
This portion of Into Tomorrow is brought to you in part by HughesNet, high-speed satellite internet available where you live or work. Text radio to 35,000. Again, text the word radio to 35,000.
There you go.
Jump aboard the time machine.
You got mail.
Time to head into yesterday with This Week in Tech History.
History.
Here's Chris.
This week in 1920, KDKA of Pittsburgh began broadcasting as the first commercial radio station.
Woohoo!
The first broadcast was the results of the 1920 presidential election.
Let's get nuts!
In 1969, the first ever computer-to-computer link was established on ARPANET, the precursor to the Internet.
Affirmative.
In 1987, this week in Japan, NEC released the first 16-bit, fourth-generation video game console, the PC Engine, which was later sold in other markets, including the U.S., under the name TurboGrafx-16.
Stimpy! I'm so happy!
You know, and of all the game systems I've ever had over the years, I think the TurboGrafx-16 was my favorite.
I think it was.
Yes. I believe so.
You played that more than anything constantly. as you were growing up.
Bunk's Adventure and Bunk's Revenge are my favorite games.
Nerd alert!
Yes, I am kind of a nerd. In 1988 this week, the Morris Worm, the first internet-distributed computer worm to gain significant media attention.
Oh, my.
Was launched by Cornell University graduate student Robert Tappan Morris. It resulted in the first conviction in the U.S. under the 1986 Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. A floppy disk containing the original source code for the worm is housed at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California.
Ew! But hopefully not connected to their internet.
Hopefully not. And this week in 1998, ATSC HDTV broadcasting in the U.S. was inaugurated with live coverage of the launch of the Space Shuttle Discovery from Cape Canaveral in Florida. That's our look back at This Week in Tech History, brought to you by IFA in Berlin, the global innovation show since 1924 for consumer tech and home appliances, and by IFA Next, the launchpad for innovations. Get more info at ifa-berlin.com.
I shall do just that. When you call in and participate on the program, you qualify to win some awesome prizes, and we've got a bunch for you this week as well. When you call in, we want to hear you. That's the key. And of course, no promises, no guarantees, but do tell us when you call in, and we'll do what we can to get that item to you. For example,
from Monoprice, you've got M1060 planar headphones.
Oh, those are very cool.
From QuietFit, QuietFit wireless earphones for fitness training.
Oh, yeah, very nice. From Tableau, some dual TV antenna DVRs with Wi-Fi.
From Forever Gifts, of Nuvolon Flare Bluetooth Lantern Speaker.
Oh, and that works so well with our scary Halloween stuff, too. 800-899-INTO. Join us, won't you?
We'll be right back.
social media sites have grown leaps and bounds, because many people have this weird concept that by sharing all the details of their lives and activities, they'll be more popular, more wanted. I can't help but wonder how that worked for you in school. Well, if you've got questions about social media, we here at Into Tomorrow have answers. I'm Dave Graveline. Your participation on the program makes the program. 23 years on the air, covering the latest in consumer tech, products, services, all sorts of cool things available today and into tomorrow. So do let us hear from you. You can call anytime, 24/7, with any consumer tech-related issue, question, comment, help for another listener. Share some tech rage if you'd like. The number to call, again, anytime, 24/7, at your convenience, is 800-899-INTO, 800-899-4686. I've been looking forward to this next interview because joining us is a guest that presents a practical, hands-on plan to get this, break up and then make up with your phone. The author of How to Break Up with Your Phone is Catherine Price. Catherine, welcome into Tomorrow. How are you?
I am doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. First of all, the title of your book got our attention, and I said, well, we talk about this on the show a lot. You know, too many people that are spending way too much time on their phone, or in some cases, it's not just millennials, that have no other part in their life, it seems, than to just be on their device. And there is certainly more to life about that. I love how even on the back of your of the cover of your book, it says, it's not you, it's your phone, you know, which is so typical where with a breakup of any kind, you know, no, it's not you, it's me. You know, I think we should move on. And it just sort of brings it home, I think, for a lot of people to say, gosh, you know, that's a good point. You know, I can't be beyond arm's reach of my phone anytime. Give me an idea about what possessed you to do How to Break Up with Your Phone, and then let's get into some of the fun stuff you cover.
Sure. Well, I'm a health and science journalist by background, so I'm already interested in behavioral change and the effect that things like phones would be having on our mental and physical health. But I also, a couple of years ago, just started to realize I was spending way too much time on my phone. And in particular, it came to a head when I had a baby, and I noticed that there were many times in which she would be looking up at me, and I would be looking down on my phone.
Oh.
And that really upset me. Yeah, not a good feeling.
Yeah.
And once I noticed
good
that.
Good job, Mom. Right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
I'm over here, oh, Mom.
Right. It was definitely not what I wanted to be doing to her or with her, or I mean, you know, also that wasn't what I wanted my experience of motherhood to be like or my own life. So it really was a wake-up call to say, how much time am I spending on this device? What am I getting out of it? And is this really how I want to be spending my time?
Good point. Because, I mean, something as simple as, and we talk about this all the time for years on this show, do you think life could be so much better if you unplug a little bit? And not just your phone, but your computer and just being online, doing whatever. But think about that. And then most everybody says, well, yeah, of course, it'd be more fulfilling, but I got to see how many likes I have, or I got to post that I'm, you know, looking at a cantaloupe in the grocery store, or what any number of things that people immediately, all of us have excuses for why we're still on our phone instead.
Right. We definitely do have excuses. I mean, and just to clarify, when I say break up with your phone, I don't mean throw your phone away. They really are legitimately useful and amazing tools, right? I mean, try to distinguish between things that are actually beneficial, productive, or fun uses of your time with your phone. Separate those from the stuff that's just a waste of time, like endlessly checking for likes or new cantaloupe references or whatever you're talking about. You know, you really want to start to hone in on what makes you feel good or productive about your phone and keep that stuff, and then figure out what makes you feel not so good and work on minimizing or eliminating that.
And I'm sure your research, Catherine, has found the same kinds of things that we've talked about a lot, and that is that phones and specifically apps are designed in many cases to addict us. We've got to come back. I mean, Facebook, probably the prime example.
Right. I mean, I think more and more people are coming to realize that we are not the products. We're not the customers of these apps. We're the products, and it's our attention that's being sold. So for many people, that's a useful thing to think about. It's, you know, wait a second, I'm actually making money for someone else right now by giving them my time and attention for free. With that said, I mean, it's not enough to just know that. You actually then have to take steps to decide what you want your boundaries to be and then figure out how you can protect yourself, again, to keep using social media in the way that you enjoy, but not letting it profit more than you want it to off of your time and attention.
And I'm pretty sure that most everyone listening is saying, I hear you, I agree, I absolutely, you know, want to break up with my phone a little bit, you know, and still use it, but of course be productive, but I've still got to be social. And it's, I've been calling it the anti-social media lately, because we're not very social when we're just on our phones. But why do you think overall people do need to break up with their phone, at least a little?
Well, it's having lots of effects on us that we're only coming to recognize. It really is affecting our ability to maintain our focus and concentration. It's obviously affecting our sleep, because we're staying up later than we want to looking at our phones, and lack of sleep is associated with all sorts of very well-established health effects. It's also having impacts on our productivity and our creativity, which I think is interesting and upsetting, in that if you're constantly filling your mind with new stuff, let alone probably kind of junky stuff, you're not giving your brain space to process what you've learned or experienced, and you're not giving yourself space to come up with any new thoughts. So in a very real sense, I think that our phones are making us dumber, your smartphones making you dumb. And I think that's something to be really concerned about. And that's for adults. I mean, and then for children, there's additional concerns, such as they haven't developed their brains yet. So it is not, I don't think, the best thing to do to have phones and the type of stimulation we get from our smartphones to be the first kind of shaping that our minds get.
And of course, as a parent, you know, we all realize that, okay, but it finally shuts them up. Fine, here's my phone, or fine, here's the tablet. You know, play the game, do what you want to do, because now they're quiet and we can enjoy dinner, or we can enjoy the TV show, or maybe enjoy the company of others that we are with. And then the problem with that crutch is just that. It's a crutch, and it becomes more and more of a problem where the kids are saying, all I've got to do is make a fuss and then I get the phone. Well, they need to break up with your phone as well.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think, first of all, parents, we need to take a look in the mirror and see what we're doing, what kind of behavior we're modeling. Because if we're telling our kids that they can't use phones, and then we're spending the whole dinner time engaging in a text message conversation with somebody else, that's not exactly what, I mean, that's not fair to expect them to do what we're not doing ourselves. But I also think we need to talk about it as families, talk about the effect that phones are having, and also recognize that it is a crutch, right? It's very easy to give your kid a phone and distract them. They will be quiet, and you'll be able to, I would like to say, focus on your conversation, but in reality, a lot of times I see parents give their kids phones, and then they go on their phone, so everyone's just on their phone.
Yeah.
But I think you need to recognize that something like reading a book is not intuitively fun or easy. It takes a lot of work to learn how to do it and to enjoy it versus watching a video or playing a game on your phone. So I think it's very difficult if your child becomes used to getting stimulation that comes from a video game or a movie. It's really hard to convince them that, hey, wait a second, it's actually worth looking at this piece of tree with words printed on it, right?
And that's a great point, Catherine, because I think parents are realizing they're just not going to buy that. I mean, yeah, reading a book, you're going to learn something, and they're going to go, uh-huh. Can I please go back to the game? Can I please watch that movie again? Can I, whatever the case? And it's like, it is difficult. I mean, I don't know how teachers do it, you know, except, you know, you can't have your phones out in class or something, but it's certainly, it's certainly frustrating, certainly to parents as well.
Well, I think we need to recognize it's not all or nothing. It's not black or white. I mean, phones have many aspects that are amazing teaching tools, right? Like YouTube. I have a nephew who's learned origami based on YouTube videos. So it's not to say that phones are entirely bad or that they don't have a place in an educational curriculum or setting, but they also have a lot of potential negative effects. They're not innocuous. And I think that's what parents and teachers, we really need to recognize and feel empowered speaking up about. They're not innocuous. They're quite powerful for both good and bad things. So I think that we need to be much more aware of that and start to talk with each other, have this be a subject of discussion at the dinner table with friends, with family, you know, at school, to talk about what impact phones are having on us, and then what we want our relationships with them to be. And what I found in my research is that one of the most well, the simplest but also most powerful things you can do is just simply to become better at paying attention to when you're using your phone and how it makes you feel, and that's how it's affecting your, the way you're interacting with other people. And the mere act of learning to pay attention and catching yourself is actually a really powerful tool for changing your behavior.
Mm. If your phone is the first thing you reach for in the morning and the last thing you touch before bed, maybe we've got a problem, and a lot of us can relate to that. And it's like, well, yeah, because of course it's the last thing because I'm checking to make sure there's nothing critical before I go to sleep. Or the first thing, yeah, what did I miss overnight? Well, it might not be social media. Maybe it's an important email or something. But it's still, now we're back to being our own crutch. You know, we're making our own excuses
right.
as to why it's the first and last thing and can overly consuming us throughout the day.
And also, like, we've gotten to the point where really the smallest accomplishment is an accomplishment. Like, for example, so you normally check your phone right when you wake up. Well, maybe tomorrow, say hello to the person in bed next to you before you check your phone. That's a step in the right direction. I mean, we're really at that point. So you don't need to think that, you know, you have to not check your phone at all during the day. And that's the definition of success. It's baby steps.
Man, Catherine, you are amazing. Can I ask you to hold a couple seconds? We're going to pay a couple of bills, come back, because there's so much more. I want to talk to you about the challenge you have available on your website as well. Back in a minute here on the Advanced Media Network. Welcome back into Tomorrow. I'm Dave Graveline. We're talking with Catherine Price, the author of How to Break Up with Your Phone. We all need this help. Phonebreakup.com. You're going to find some fascinating stuff on her site, not only about the book and how you can invite someone else to break up with their phone, because we all know that other person, right? It's not us. It's those other guys and gals. It's those other folks in the family, whatever. And some great resources. And among other things, a challenge. I'm noticing, Catherine, on your site, you can sign up for a 30-day phone breakup challenge. Tell me about this challenge.
Sure. So, I mean, the structure of the book itself is that the first half is meant to freak you out with science, and then the second half is a 30-day plan to help you change your behavior.
Good. So you're not just freaking us out and leaving us. You're freaking us out and helping us.
Exactly. Because all the books I'd read on the subject did the former but not the latter, and I just left feeling depressed and kind of like paralyzed. I thought, I don't want to do that. I want to help people. So the second, that's why the book is a 30-day plan. But then I thought, I don't want people to just have the book and read it like I do self-help books and toss it aside, not actually do it. I want to create something that will support them. So I put together a series of 30 days worth of emails that can accompany you as you go through your breakup with your phone. And that's available on the website. So basically you just sign up, and then whenever you sign up, that's when the emails start. So I encourage people to do that. And it also, it's a lot more fun to do if you've got friends and family, because I've found personally, at least, that this is a really great conversation starter. And that in many cases, people are actually grateful that you brought it up, because I think everyone is starting to recognize that something is weird about our relationships with our phones. I mean, just look around you the next time you go outside.
Oh.
So I found it to be really nice. I mean, I actually, as part of that challenge, I have these surveys, like questionnaires people can take to say what they love about their phone, say what they don't love, basically keep themselves on track. And it's been very interesting for me to see the commonalities of the responses that people send. And I really can say, well, first of all, Facebook, you should be worried, because when I ask what's the most problematic, it's Facebook. But second, everyone's struggling with the same thing, so I think we should start talking about it.
That's a good point, and it might very well be that your book, How to Break Up with Your Phone, caused them to lose, $160 billion a week or so ago.
It was entirely me.
It was entirely, and kudos. You know, I pat you on the back for that, Catherine, because you made us aware in a rather unique way. One of my favorite chapters of your book is Why Social Media Sucks. And it's exactly the kind of thing we've been talking about. They lure us in, and it is about, unfortunately, about likes. And, oh, I wonder if so-and-so saw this. Hey, did you see my post? Well, you didn't like it. You know? And that,
you sort of think it's like something, if you don't get a like on Instagram, but something happened at all, it's like a tree falling in the forest. And you need to be like, well, yes, it did happen. And you probably enjoyed it more if you weren't immediately posting it. I mean, but I find, I find it to be very hypocritical of the social media companies to talk about how they're supposedly all about helping us engage in meaningful interactions, quote unquote, when in reality, they're really just trying to get us to spend more time on them.
Oh, of course.
And I like to point out to people, one of the things I found the most fascinating is the similarities between a social media app and a casino. You know, casinos don't have clocks. They don't have windows. And that's so that you lose track of time. And if you notice the endlessness of social media feeds and the way they're designed, they're very much deliberately designed to make us lose track of how much time we're spending on them so that they can make more money off of showing us ads.
Never thought about it that way, but you are absolutely correct. And now, one thing that you said, which kind of caught me, you talk about the challenge and then you'll send an email with helping us out and so forth. Well, gee, I'm sorry, Catherine, but I've got to pick up my phone to get your email.
You can check it on your desktop. Although, honestly, I mean, again, people are like, oh, isn't that ironic? Because I recommend all sorts of like things like app blockers and time trackers and things for the phone. Isn't it ironic to use technology to protect ourselves from technology? And
yes.
I said, well, no, it's actually, you're dealing with, as you were saying, an addictive device. And you need to have, and you're trying to use it while you're still being addicted to it. So it makes a lot of sense to me to use the tools that are available within that device to help you get better at putting it down. So to me, I think it's just really, you know, you have to recognize and appreciate tools.
Oh, for sure. And use them wisely. And as you said before, we're not saying don't ever be on Instagram and Facebook and tweet and so forth. Of course you want to do those things if you've been doing them, if you care. I do have some friends, even as the host of the tech show, that say, oh, I don't do any of that. I don't tweet. I'm not on Facebook. I don't Instagram. What the heck is that? Whatever. Wow. You know, it's 2018. You do know that, right? but some some people don't have that issue because they just don't care about the social media stuff. And it's like,
well, you also, I was going to say, you can also, you can use social media without getting sucked into it. You can say, like, I don't care particularly about likes, but know that for your business, it's important to post new, you know, information or to use it as a tool. So again, it's not all or bad or good, but you need to be aware of how you're being manipulated and used, and then make sure that you have a clear purpose for what you're doing.
Yes.
So that you kind of, you know, it's transparency. It's like knowing what everyone's up to and being okay with that.
Catherine Price is the author of How to Break Up with Your Phone. You've got to check out her site. It's very easy. PhoneBreakup.com. And again, we'll get you there when you visit us at intotomorrow.com. Got to get you back on the show again soon. You are so much fun to talk to and so accurate in everything we're talking about. Thanks so much for joining us on Into Tomorrow.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
We're back with more as we continue. I'm Dave Graveline on the Advanced Media Network. If you keep staring up in the sky trying to figure out which cloud has all your data, call us for assistance and we'll talk about cloud computing, what it really is and means to you and your life, because Into Tomorrow is here to help. I'm Dave Graveline.
I'm Beth Gatrell.
And I'm Chris Graveline. This portion of Into Tomorrow brought to you by the Dexcom G6 Continuous Glucose Monitoring System. Make knowledge your superpower. Visit Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Yes, indeed. George in Tyler, Texas, listening on KTBB. Hello, George.
I'm calling to get some information about parental controls for cell phones and what the best app or applications to use for a teenage device.
Well, George, if you have to ask, you're probably already lost the arms war because as parents, we can all relate to that. If you're interested, though, in tracking them, of course, iOS, Android, and most carriers will all do that for you. But when it comes to blocking apps, pretty much you're in trouble. Teenagers will know how to get around any blocks typically that you put on as soon as there's a solution. And these are blacklists, not whitelists. So anytime whatever service you use to block the apps can be tricked into thinking there's absolutely another one there, even one it's never heard of, the app is allowed to do what it will do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, times have changed since I was a kid, and my parents just came in and unplugged the phone from the wall of my room when I wasn't allowed to use it. But,
yeah.
But Android has more options for blocking apps, but they're also more toothless, since Android phones allow sideloading, meaning that anything that can be made to look different can be loaded and run without an issue. There's a big market of premium apps made free and put up for download on Android. The same process can be used to make them look like they're not the app that they really are.
Yeah. Now, more info for you, because we're out of time in this hour, at intotomorrow.com.